I'm Joy Cardine with you on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 9 minutes past 6 o'clock on this Tuesday, February the 6th. And it's another cold one out there, maybe not as cold as yesterday. And it looks like most schools are opening back up in Wisconsin today, but not in Milwaukee or Sheboygan, as we just heard in the news. Quite a few schools are opening up later than usual, too. So as they say, check where you usually check for local school district information before sending the kids out to the bus stop. We are going to check in this hour on the facts and figures and reactions to President Bush's proposed federal budget unveiled yesterday. The president says, and the Office of Budget Management says, this $2.9 trillion budget request reduces the deficit every year and balances the budget by 2012. We'll see if our guest agrees with that. Also, according to the president, the budget request combats terrorism and protects the homeland by increasing funding for the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan and national security. President Bush says his budget keeps the economy strong with low taxes. He wants to make his tax cuts permanent. He says that this budget will slow the unsustainable growth of entitlement spending with sensible reforms. We'll review the reforms that he wants in Medicare and Medicaid. And he says it promotes domestic priorities such as No Child Left Behind and energy security while holding the growth in non-security discretionary domestic spending to 1%. So lots of ideas to explore this hour as we review the proposed 2008 federal budget that President Bush unveiled yesterday and sent to Congress. And we will welcome your reactions and questions for our guest economist. 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234, toll free from anywhere. If you're in Madison, 263-1890, 263-1890. Or send us an email to talk@wpr.org, talk@wpr.org. Please include your first name and your community with your email. Our guest is Teresa Giliducci. She is a professor of economics and director of the Higgins Labor Research Center at Notre Dame University. Good morning.
Good morning.
Are you staying warm?
I am.
Good. So I know neither of us have been able to read this massive document. I understand there's four volumes. It's 2,500 pages long, but thanks for agreeing to go over some of these major items as outlined in the summaries.
Sure. A lot of what was in the budget was expected, so a lot of economists have been prepared with some analysis.
Yeah, the in this list of highlights I have, I think from the Office of Budget Management, it says that this reduces the deficit every year and balances the budget by 2012, but some are saying there's been a lot of number juggling to claim that. Is that right?
Right. And yesterday's budget release did provide sort of more grist for the skepticism. There's four reasons why the deficit probably won't be reduced mm-hmm. as the president has promised. The first one is that though he has put in the budget money to pay for his proposed surge, he assumes in the budget that there'll be no spending on Iraq and Afghanistan in 2009. Now, I can see why a president would not want to tell the enemy how much money they plan on spending in coming years, but a lot of the Republicans are saying it's the reason why they haven't budgeted for the war in Iraq and Afghanistan is they expect to not spend money there or will be reduced, and nobody really thinks that will happen. The second reason why the deficit probably won't be reduced is that the president assumes, and this might be a little bit technical, but that he assumes that taxes will be increased for upper middle class people through a fixing of what's called the alternative minimum tax.
Okay.
And nobody thinks that will happen. The alternative minimum tax affects people who live in high-income tax states. Mm-hmm. So those are sort of blue states or Democratic areas. So the president assumes that the government will actually keep the taxes very high in those areas. And they don't really affect the very rich. It really affects sort of the upper middle class folks. And so we don't think that the taxes will be increased on them. The third thing is, and this is actually what's pretty disturbing because it repeats a mistake that presidents always make, is that it looks that the president is assuming that the economy is going to grow and grow and grow at rates above 3%. And even the Federal Reserve Bank doesn't think that those kinds of growth rates are sustainable. So, you know, so if you assume that the economy is going to grow and grow and the tax revenue is going to flow in, then it's easy to assume that the deficit, you know, will be eliminated, but it won't. And it also assumes that these very drastic cuts in a lot of local programs and housing, health care, and child care, and in transportation and Medicare and the environment will go through. And nobody thinks that this Democratic Congress could actually, make those cuts.
Yeah. We're going to get more on the Democratic reaction and talk more about what's in this proposed $2.9 trillion federal budget request for fiscal year 2008, unveiled yesterday by President Bush. All the major items in it and some questions being raised about it after we check the weather. And we welcome your questions. Does this sound good to you or not? 1-800-642-1234. In Madison, 263-1890. I'm Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. It's 17 minutes past 6 o'clock on this very cold Tuesday morning, February the 6th. Stay tuned. Coming up this afternoon, it's At Issue with Ben Marins between 4 and 6, where Ben and his guests will talk about current issues of the day. This hour, we're talking about the proposed federal budget unveiled yesterday by President Bush.
Our economy is strong because of good policy. And because the entrepreneurial spirit is strong, by keeping taxes down, we actually generate strong revenues to the Treasury. And I appreciate Director Portman helping us devise a plan that sets priorities and at the same time emphasizes fiscal restraint. Our priority is to protect the American people. And our priority is to make sure our troops have what it takes to do their jobs. We also have got priorities in national parks and education and health care. But we have proven, and I strongly believe Congress needs to listen to, a budget which has no tax increase and a budget because of fiscal discipline that can be balanced in 5 years.
We're talking with Teresa Ghellarducci. She is a professor of economics and director of the Higgins Labor Research Center at Notre Dame University about what's in this budget. And welcoming your questions, your reactions to it at 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. In Madison, 263-1890, 263-1890. We've already discussed some of the reasons why this budget probably will not reduce the deficit every year and balance the budget by 2012, as claimed by the president. Let's now talk some about some of these other claims that were made, including that this is going to promote some key domestic priorities. What key domestic priorities is the president promoting here, Professor Ghellarducci?
Well, to his credit, he's going right to the heart of our economic problem, and that's that we have not dealt with this huge increase in health care costs and the fact that employers are really being saddled with, you know, the responsibility of providing health care to the citizens, whereas no other country really does that. That's a responsibility spread to the whole population. So he is claiming that his proposal that we heard about in the State of the Union address to tax people who have what he calls Cadillac health benefits to help subsidize the health insurance that people have to buy on their own because they don't have coverage at work. The problem with that is fundamental, that it may actually redistribute some money from those who have, you know, good health plans. And those aren't necessarily high-income people. They may be actually school teachers who've sacrificed pay increase for the past, 10 years. That's happened in some school districts in order to get health coverage, for their family. It will take money from that group and give it to people like self-employed people who go out in the market and buy it on their own. The problem with that is that it doesn't do anything about what's causing those health insurance costs to go up.
Yeah. And again, that's something that the Democratic-controlled Congress may not like very much.
It's actually almost irrelevant to the problem, economic problems facing the country. So they won't like it, but they'll also, really be justified in saying it's really irrelevant. We want some other kind of proposals that will stop the cost of health care.
Speaking of health care, he's seeking some reforms in Medicare and Medicaid, saying that these programs are unsustainable entitlement programs that need to be reformed. What does he want to change with Medicare and Medicaid?
Well, he's right about that. Medicare and Medicaid spending can't be sustainable. But he wants to do something, again, that is not a new idea, and no other nation has embraced it. It either has ours and probably won't. He wants to what's called means test, the prescription, Medicare and Medicaid. Mainly Medicare and some prescription drug benefits. And that is that so-called high-income Medicare recipients, people over the age of 65, will not get as many benefits. Also with Social Security, he wants to slow down the increases of benefits to so-called higher-income elderly. Now, higher-income elderly are people who, older people who have incomes more than $45,000 per year. And above. So we're not talking just people over $1 million. Now, this is the reason why most, even though it makes sense on the surface, let's take from the rich and give to the poor, is that nobody now knows if they're going to be a high-income elderly or not. Mm-hmm. And in fact, many people save money just in case. You know, they don't have enough when they retire. So what that would do is if you have a program that says, hey, if you saved a lot of money and you retire, we're going to cut your benefits. Well, that instantly will stop any kind of motivation for saving, which in this country we desperately do not need. And therefore, it's just not prudent or really practical to punish people for saving.
Yeah. Another highlight on this summary that I have here is one of the key domestic priorities, education and specifically No Child Left Behind?
Yeah, that I don't understand why he can claim that he is advancing that program. It's true that the No Child Left Behind, this complicated system of accountability for schools, they have to test their students, and then if they don't meet those standards, then the children of those schools are promised tutoring programs and all sorts of other measures to bring the school up. That law is still there, but there's nothing in this bill that funds those mandates. So school districts, and I'm just looking at articles all around the country, are saying that they are actually putting more pressure on school districts to stop their programs in art and music and sports just to pay for the testing. So there's nothing in that budget to pay for those testing or tutors.
And that was one of the biggest complaints, is that there wasn't funding for it.
Right, and that hasn't been fixed.
Yeah. Another education item I see here is increasing Pell Grants for low-income college students.
Yeah, hooray. That's good. but on the other side, there is really no revenue proposed to pay for that. So if you're going to increase Pell Grants, you take it away from Head Start programs. So either you either give it to the 17-year-olds, but you take it away from the 5-year-olds.
Yeah, and I'm trying to figure out what is he talking about here for enhanced energy security. That's another key domestic priority.
Tax breaks for corn producers.
Ah, so ethanol.
Ethanol, right.
Yeah. Well, we heard in that clip that he says that, we're going to get some of this revenue by the strong economy, and these tax breaks that he wants to make permanent will actually increase the revenue coming in.
Yeah, that's disturbing because it's so old and stale. Mm-hmm. If that sounds familiar to you, it's because that was the promise under the Reagan administration in the 80s. And also Margaret Thatcher in England, that if you cut taxes for people at the very top, then that will encourage them to invest and to create more jobs. The problem with that in our global economy is that if you cut taxes even more for corporations than for the higher income people that own those stocks and bonds in those corporations, it usually gives them enough money, more money to invest in jobs abroad, you know, so that you actually might be able to help create jobs in India and China. But these broad tax cuts do nothing to create jobs in Wisconsin and Michigan. Better kinds of targeted tax cuts would be tax cuts for investments, for small business, but mainly if you solve the problem of the health care costs that employers have to shoulder, that will go a much longer way for them to encourage to expand jobs.
Yeah. The administration, I thought, has been crowing about the deficit being cut, maybe even cut in half in recent years, and pointing to those tax cuts as the reason why that happened.
That's just wrong. that's just wrong. The stimulus that comes from the tax cuts, all economists, even at the Federal Reserve, you know, people in his own government, has not been enough to make up for the revenue lost when you cut taxes. You can't get revenue increases by cutting taxes. That magic just isn't there.
Yeah.
The other disturbing thing about the deficit, it's the first time that we've run huge deficits when the economy is doing well. It's usually expected that the government will run big deficits when the economy is not doing well, when you have to pay out unemployment insurance and welfare benefits and, you know, people aren't working. But it's almost unheard of that the deficit has kept on growing when people are employed and paying taxes.
Yeah. And another item here in this summary is that this spends taxpayer dollars wisely by holding the growth in non-security discretionary spending to 1%. That is the cuts you were talking about, especially in local domestic programs?
That's right. That's exactly right. So he thinks that, I mean, what he's saying to us is that it's responsible to cut money on affordable housing subsidies that the federal government gives cities, Head Start programs, local law enforcement, magnet schools. I mean, every community has, you know, different priorities. And so in order to get money to pay for tax cuts or to pay for this 10% increase in the defense spending, you have to take it away from what's called discretionary spending. The problem is that that's such a small part of the budget that you have to make drastic cuts in Head Start, transportation, environmental protection to make even a little bit of headway in increasing money towards defense.
Let's check news from National Public Radio and Wisconsin Public Radio and then welcome your questions about this proposed $2.9 trillion federal budget for fiscal year 2008, unveiled yesterday by President Bush. We wonder if you have questions about the priorities highlighted, the spending increases and decreases highlighted. 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234. In Madison, 263-1890, 263-1890. I'm Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. It's 6:36 on this Tuesday, February the 6th, and we are talking this hour about President Bush's $2.9 trillion budget for fiscal year 2008 that he unveiled yesterday. And according to the New York Times this morning, with its military spending increases, reductions in popular domestic programs, and calls to extend tax cuts, President Bush's budget for 2008 drew fire from Democrats the minute it landed. And though the piece goes on to say that while the Democrats may wish to challenge this budgetary blueprint, it's going to be pretty hard because the only way that they can find the money to restore the administration's proposed spending cuts would be to cut back on military spending. And that is going to be tough. Or is it? 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. In Madison, 263-1890, 263-1890. Or send us an email with your question or comment to talk@wpr.org. talk@wpr.org. We are talking with Teresa Ghilarducci. She is a professor of economics and director of the Higgins Labor Research Center at Notre Dame University. And we'll go to the phones and take some calls. Chuck in Endeavor is with us first. Hi, Chuck. You're on the air.
Hi. Good morning to you and your guest.
Morning.
I would like to. I'm glad you have her on today because she's taking the myth out of this budget that President Bush has proposed, and she's doing a fine analysis with the high points of this budget. And I think the huge elephant in the room in this budget is the military aspect of it. And we hear President Bush in his speech say that he's there to, or this budget is going to help support the troops and make sure they have the equipment they need. Now, if we were to, let's break that down into its smallest components. And if we look at what it costs to give the troops what they need, their ammo, their food, their body armor, armor on their Humvees, that's a very small segment of the expense of the total military budget in the hundreds of billions of dollars. So, as usual, what this budget does that President Bush has is mask a redistribution of the wealth to the wealthy, and it takes from programs like Medicare $6 billion. In one breath, he talks about let's promote health care in this country. But the big money in the military budget is going to the contractors like Halliburton, Kellogg and Root, and some of the large security firms that are operating in Iraq and Afghanistan. And once again, we're taking care of political connected cronies of the Bush administration with billions of dollars of lavishing our national wealth on them.
So you're saying, Chuck, that the Congress could cut this military spending and not hurt the troops?
Yes, absolutely. As far as I'm concerned, I'm a military veteran myself, and I'm one that's for getting out of Iraq completely. Let's disengage from that mess before we help the poor Iraqi people any more than we have. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't see how it could be any worse, even if in the short term it might get a little worse, but in the long term we'll be doing them a favor and the American people a favor.
Yeah, it says here that the president is seeking $100 billion for the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan for the rest of this fiscal year and more than $145 billion for fiscal year 2008. Is most of that money, Professor Ghilarducci, going to the contractors?
I don't know if most of it is, but we have to understand that one thing that the Defense Department wanted was Donald Rumsfeld and the new Secretary of the Defense is continuing that policy, is to really change who fights our wars. Cheney and Rumsfeld had always said that they want more citizens to participate in the war, meaning more paid soldiers, more paid contractors. So we've seen this huge shift away from our soldiers driving trucks and providing food and cooking and doing other kinds of infrastructure to private contractors at, as your caller said, as Chuck said, at sometimes 5 to 10 times the cost. So there's a real change of philosophy embedded in this budget, away from, you know, soldiers doing the work and the military doing the work towards private contractors. So he's absolutely right about that. The other thing that he pointed out is that the this increase in spending for the defense is not going towards the soldiers, and you know, I'm surprised he didn't mention it, or to the veterans. One of the ironies here is that even though he talks about helping people who have to buy their insurance on their own, you know, in civilians, he's actually cutting spending for veterans' health care. So this war is actually producing less people, less corpses, less soldiers who have died, but it is actually producing many more wounded. So we would have expected more spending in that area, but we didn't get it.
So is this a budget, Professor Ghilarducci, that emphasizes the guns issues rather than the bread and butter issues?
Absolutely. As soon as we see a budget, we ask how much money is going to guns, how much money is going to butter, and who's paying for it. So, yes, the huge increase in the defense spending, 62% since the president came to office. But within that budget, that gun budget, it's going towards private contractors and a lot of new technology and a lot of new equipment. One of the things that Rumsfeld said he wanted to do is to actually use up the inventory, the kind of old equipment left over from the first Gulf War and even from Vietnam, use that all up and really start investing in new technology. When you do that, you don't leave anything for increases for the soldiers, their families, and for veteran health care.
I want you to react to this news analysis piece that was in the New York Times this morning, which says that Democrats know the only way they can find the revenue to restore the administration's proposed spending cuts would be to cut back on military spending, delay their stated intentions to balance the budget, or rescind the Bush tax cuts in future years. They are not especially eager to do any of these.
Right. They probably will not be able to cut domestic spending anymore, not because of the politics, but there just isn't that much money in magnet schools, Head Start, and local law enforcement. So the second one is that they may have to tolerate higher deficits. That's completely possible. Politicians like to think short-term and not long-term. But the third one is really where the Democrats have to prove their mettle, whether or not they can actually rescind these tax cuts that by all measures, and these are bipartisan measures, are only going to the top 1%. And oddly, these are people, who are making over $1 million in the top 0.3%, and the top 1% are folks making over $500,000 a year. They really haven't lobbied for these tax cuts. They love to have them, but they haven't made any kind of case that without the tax cuts, they won't, participate in economic growth. In fact, many millionaires, Bill Gates' father is one of them, and even other billionaires, have actually started a campaign. They started this a couple of years ago, asking the president to tax them. They make the point that they did not create their wealth on their own initiative alone, that they needed a whole infrastructure and a lot of workers and the Justice Department and law enforcement, and that they actually want to pay, in this regard, the estate tax. So what I'm really looking for in the Democratic leadership is making a case to the millionaires, to the billionaires, and to the American people that the tax revenue machine, architecture really has to be restructured to go back to something that actually brings in revenue and is more balanced.
Well, let's see what listeners think. Do you think those tax cuts should be rescinded or made permanent? And what other questions do you have about the federal budget unveiled by President Bush yesterday? 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, in Madison, 263-1890. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. It's 13 minutes before 7 o'clock. Hope you stay tuned. Coming up after 7, I'll be welcoming in the author of The Walmart Effect, talking about the company's impact on the American economy, for better or for worse. That's coming up after 7 o'clock. Right now, we're talking about the federal budget that was proposed, unveiled yesterday by President Bush. He sent his $2.9 trillion budget plan to Capitol Hill yesterday. He He's asking for billions more for Iraq and Afghanistan while cutting some domestic spending and other highlights that we are discussing this hour with our guest, Teresa Ghilarducci. She is a professor of economics at Notre Dame University. By the way, Ben Maron's this afternoon after 4 o'clock. We'll have a guest analyst discussing the highlights and or lowlights of the president's budget after 4 o'clock this afternoon. As well. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. We're welcoming your questions and reactions to this. Arlene in Burlington is with us next. Hi, you're on the air.
Good morning. Good morning.
Morning.
I have a comment and a question that it has been suggested that we have open disclosure and accountability of the higher up corporate employees and the CEOs of their income and their benefits. Would it not be beneficial if we had that same open disclosure and accountability of our government employees and workers on their income and benefits? Many rumors go around. We really don't see what they are earning, and it might be interesting to know where part of our deficit is going for the overlapping incomes and retirement programs.
Professor Ghilarducci, Arlene, government employees' salaries are public record. What do you mean that you think that that should be released? I'm not sure.
Openly, right.
What, printed in the paper or something?
Yes, something like you get an annual report for a corporation spending.
Yeah. Professor Ghilarducci, what about that?
Oh, well, Arlene, you're in luck because the amount of money spent on salaries and benefits and pensions are open records. They're right. They're actually in the budget, and they are required to be reported by every state agency. So in fact, looking at public employee pension funds and health care costs is an open debate. So I don't have any trouble finding that information. And what's actually really good about reporting in the public sector, in the government sector, is that the assumptions made about how all these, these numbers are computed are also, the accounting methods are also transparent as well. So I don't know if that's where we're going to find a lot of sort of hidden, revenue that's not being released or hidden cost. I think what is not being revealed is where the cost of health care is coming from. We have a very difficult time knowing if it's because of procedures that are not being done or just because of administrative costs and insurance costs. And also, we don't know actually where corporate benefits are being paid. So Arlene says that somehow, it's more revelatory in the corporate sector. I don't think that's true at all. We still need a lot more information about executive pay.
Yeah. Well, are the health benefits that these executives have and maybe the government workers that Arlene wants to know more about, are those the Cadillac health benefits that the president wants to tax?
Well, the corporate executives, they certainly are. But that's not where the corporations are hiding their pay for their executives. It's actually in things like stock options and other such things. But I think you've asked whether or not government employees tend to have better health care benefits than other people, and that's absolutely true. Again, that's usually because they've given up their wage increases.
Mm-hmm. All right. Thank you very much, Arlene, for the call. Mike in Appleton is with us now. Hi, Mike. You're on the air.
Yeah, good morning.
Good morning.
Just some thoughts. First of all, on tax breaks, whether they should be frozen, extended, why not just have something flexible? According to what the situation is, you tax people. Kind of like the way the federal, the Fed runs the interest rates. That's one point. The other point is with regards to taxing people who make tons of money. Yeah, I mean, if you make $200 million a year, I mean, how much can you spend? And the idea of being there, you had the opportunity to make that money because of the existing infrastructure, and so you should pay, heavily for that opportunity.
Yeah, just two quick responses. The caller sounds like he could be the Secretary of the Treasury, because the past Secretary of the Treasury and Alan Greenspan did support what you just said, that there should be a trigger. If the deficit is eliminated and the debt is being paid off, then we could afford a tax cut, and that would trigger a tax cut. But if the deficit is still growing, then these Republicans proposed that the tax cuts should not be implemented. So that's a very actually mainstream and kind of the middle of the road sensible suggestion.
Thank you very much, Mike, for the suggestion. Richard in Madison is with us now. Hi, Richard.
Good morning.
Morning.
I'm a grandfather, three kids, seven grandchildren, one great-grandchild, and 78 years of age. Been a saver all my life, and I've been saving, hopefully, for the kids and the grandchildren. And after 2010, the inheritance tax is scheduled to drop back to a rather draconian tax level. For those of us that have been conservative and savers and owned real estate that's gone higher, I'd like the professor's comment on what she thinks about that.
Yeah, no, I really laud you for saving, and it really is important that the estate tax be fixed. I am in favor, as most people, most economists are, of raising the limit. Like, for instance, any estates that are less than $3 or $5 million, it really doesn't matter which, are completely exempt from an estate tax. But estates after that limit, above that limit, after $5 million, should be taxed. And if the tax that had, if the tax break does expire, and the limit raised, you actually bring in billions of dollars, hundreds of billions of dollars. That, for one thing, solves a third of the projected deficit in Social Security, pays for 10 years of Pentagon spending increases. The money above $5 million is enormous, and taxing that would do a lot to solve the debt.
Thank you very much, Richard, for the call. Got an email from Randy in La Crosse who says, if I could, I would go back and tax those who have benefited from the tax cuts. End the tax cuts for the wealthy now. The economy is only good if you have money to invest. The poor are paying for the rich to prosper. A reaction to that, Professor Gellar-Ducci?
Yeah, it's probably the poor certainly haven't gotten anything here, and they don't get very much from tax cuts. But I would say that the middle class really has taken on more of the tax burden because of the cuts at the very top. And at the very top, we're talking about the 0.3% who make over $1 million. And referring back to a comment made by your last caller, too, those folks have not clamored for big tax cuts. The tax cuts have not come from sort of an organic complaint from that group that they actually need more money to spend. So economists see absolutely no harm to economic growth or activity if those taxes are reinstated. Also, we should take a historical perspective. Never before in this country has a war been fought without increasing taxes on the people who can afford it the most. So in that way, this budget is very, very unusual because we're still not raising taxes to pay for the war.
Yeah. We only have a couple of minutes more to go here. I'm wondering if you can talk a little bit more about this. It's technical, but this minimum alternative tax. I thought you mentioned that you talked a little bit about that when we started. It says here that there's some sort of fix for that, so the middle class wouldn't have to worry about that. What is he proposing with that?
Yes. Well, in the budget, there is not a fix. Mm-hmm. So it assumes that upper middle class group is still paying the alternative minimum tax, and that's why he says that he can cut the deficit. But most experts say that this alternative minimum tax really is an accident,
that it really should have been updated a long time ago, and most people expect Congress to fix that, which would further lower taxes for the upper middle class. So the alternative minimum tax not being fixed is a way to keep tax revenue going, but it probably isn't where we want tax revenue in to be gotten. We really want to fix the whole tax cut so that the upper income pay more tax.
Yeah, and you expect that the Democrats in Congress, who control Congress in the minute we have here to go, will not necessarily rubber stamp this proposal?
I think it's actually warmer in Milwaukee outside than it is than will be Congress's reception of this budget.
Yeah.
It really is worse than I ever thought because it doesn't take on some of the very big issues.
Yeah, thank you so much for being with us. We really appreciate it.
Sure.
Teresa Ghilarducci is a professor of economics and the director of the Higgins Labor Research Center at Notre Dame University, talking with us about the highlights of President Bush's $2.9 trillion budget proposal for fiscal year 2008, which was released yesterday. More on this from Ben Marins and his guest coming up after 4 o'clock this afternoon during At Issue with Ben Marins. Thanks very much to Karen Prager for producing this hour and to Cheryl Gasser as well. Thank you for listening. I hope you stay tuned. There's much more to come. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.